Motion Picture Massacre. Welcome to the show. Yes, welcome to the massacre. Here's some films you might not know. Sometimes trashy, sometimes classy, always raw and never flashy. Welcome to the massacre.
Hold on one sec. Okay. Hi, everybody. Vaughn here. This is going to be something weird, something different. Janik, right?
It's Janik.
Janik. Ambrose, reach out to me. He's a producer, writer, director. He kind of just was like, yeah, you know, like, why don't you see, you want to, you know, talk about stuff I, you know, the movies I make and all that stuff. I was like, yeah, sure. Why not? I'm always interested and talking to people I've never met that kind of have the same kind of interests that I do. So I'm always not against it. So Janik, how are you?
I'm good, man. I'm good. Thanks for having me on.
Sure. Now, you're mostly, I guess, mostly a producer who, like, I guess in your stuff is all over the place. It's documentary, shorts, main features, whatnot. You also direct.
Yeah. I guess I would say I'm mostly a producer, because it's like, and I guess when I direct or write, I'm producing that as well. So yeah, I totally love to produce other people's, like, you know, like help them make their own story and produce right. that and get involved in that capacity as well as just like, you know, directing and stuff like that.
And most of the stuff you direct and like is mostly political, which is kind of a difference for here, because we kind of just talk about cult films and horror films and whatnot, so it's a little different. And it seems like you're delving into that more as the stuff you're making now is more straight fiction features, I guess you could say. But you're more political than most people I, you know, get to read about. So it's kind of fun to look at the stuff and kind of look through interviews you've done for the other kind of documentaries and whatnot.
Yeah, and I think I think. You know, I'm very into like cult movies and kind of like old films and films from the 60s and stuff like that. So mm-hmm. I don't know. But I'm also very interested in politics and, you know, like human rights and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. So it, in a weird way, it's like, I like to look at like the political, you know, stratosphere in a very kind of cynical way.
Right.
Because I'm just very kind of, you know, just suspect of most people in power, and especially in this country. So in a weird roundabout way, it can kind of end up being like a more satirical look and more cynical look that, you know,
right.
A lot of the cult movies back in the day would be like allegories for like just dystopic and nightmarish our political system is to like the working class and the poor and stuff. So
yeah.
It's like, so in some way I like to tackle some of those stuff head on,
right.
But in other ways that helps me kind of do it in a more subterranean way when I'm doing like even a comedy or something, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Because yeah, the stuff that, like, you know, especially in California, it's a much weirder of a state than where I live in Jersey.
Where in Jersey are you?
What was it Middletown, Red Bank area?
I was born in Jersey, and like my grandma lived like right outside of like Patterson and stuff like that. So I'm a huge New Jersey Devils fan. So like that's where I was originally from.
Yeah. So you went to California to kind of get your dream started and whatnot.
After I finished school in upstate New York for business, because mm-hmm. I kind of always knew that it'd be good to know the business side of things, because at the end of the day, movies are the most expensive, like paintbrush, you know, it's like the most expensive mm-hmm. art form.
Right.
So I, after, right when I finished undergrad school, where I studied like economics, I went to California and started my company, the same company now, Assembly Line Entertainment, mm-hmm. right away. And basically just have been doing that ever since, just kind of went on my own immediately, you know, kind of didn't do the, I PA'd and stuff like on a few films really early on, but I kind of just went for it right away.
Right. What influenced you, like, as to become a filmmaker? Like, was there any kind of directors or any kind of like time period that you were really into?
Yeah, totally. So being from Jersey, like, you know, it's like, and then growing up in upstate New York,
Yeah.
Like New York films I liked a lot. Like girl, when I was like 10 or 11 and stuff, like I would watch Goodfellas, like Scorsese, right. Like I would say the three or four directors that I think of when anybody says film director, mm-hmm. you know, it is like Scorsese, Coppola, Spike Lee, yeah. You know, and Spielberg, you know, so like it those were the kind of the directors that really at a young age, really young age were the ones that inspired me. To like be like, or to, that got me kind of thinking about what a director is, and you know, and like what all that stuff. So yeah, ever since I was really young, I always wanted to kind of do make movies. And then naturally, I think people think the first thing they think of is like making movies is the director. And you kind of get older, you're kind of like, oh, there's a writer, there's a production designer, there's a producer, mm-hmm. you know. And so it's not too director centric, I guess, as I was when I was really young. Yeah. But yeah, definitely, I would say. Those types of movies. I'm Polish, so a lot of Polish cinema kind of was like got me a little, even more thinking about like, right. oh, like film is like as a really like kind of almost esoteric art form is kind of cool too. And then like the fun movies like Fear and Loathing, you know, growing up watching that kind of shit, I was just like, oh, this is there's just a lot of energy on the thing I'm watching, and I was just like attracted to that. You know?
Okay. So like. You kind of like I said, you have your hands in different pots within, you know, in filmmaking in general. As an independent, you know, producer, director, writer, do you think it's harder to get your stuff out there to, you know, the masses, the people you want to get your stuff out to, or do you think it's because it didn't seem like the stuff I've seen that's online about you and whatnot, and the stuff you put out, it's kind of, you know, you have to go and search for it. You know what I mean?
Basically how I kind of do it is like, you know, I do some really indie stuff. Like obviously there's some I kind of do some pretty you know, even avant-garde like experimental work, right? So like, yep. Of course that's not being, you know, sent out to the masses, right. But as a producer, you know I've done, and I'm in a bunch, I wouldn't even say I've done, like I've helped produce mostly through financing and some of that aspect. Mm-hmm. Movies with like you know, the Human Capital, 10,000 Saints, both were, you know, are at good festivals like Sundance and TIFF, yeah. And those reach a population, a small population, but those right. are a little bit, I would say, more mainstream than some of my like doc work, like mm-hmm. you know, like even like documentaries or you know, we're hoping that the upcoming film I have, even though it is pretty like, you know, niche, that right. it kind of garners like a cool cult following and get some cool people into it. Mm-hmm. You know, people who are into like psychedelia and 60s kind of films, or it's people into drug culture.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it's also just the comedy. So it's like maybe the stoner film kind of aspect. So yeah, I mean, look, I ultimately, you know, I see this as like a long-term thing, right? So it's like, I'd rather just try to make the the movies I want to make.
Yeah.
And then if the audience isn't, you know, is quite as big,
right,
you know,
right, right.
It is what it is. But like, at least, because if you're working in a more like, you know, space of of where you of like a studio project, you know, you're one of many people, which is a very cool, you know, I know people who work in that space and it's very cool, but it's just like you don't have as much independence, obviously. So so yeah, it's just kind of you know, it's in hopes that the cohorts of audience kind of expand and grow and kind of interweave with all the different things I have my hands in.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, because it's like you want to kind of make something that you feel that's going to flourish, that's going to hit somebody, and that somebody's going to continue to push it out to other people. You know what I mean? Like there's a director that I really love. His name is Richard Elfman. He directed a couple films, Forbidden Zone, Shrunken Heads. He's kind of a, you know, he's an LA director. He was the brother of Danny Elfman. And he's clearly a cult director because he makes a film every so many years when he gets the cash or when he gets somebody to, you know, back him up. And he's a bon vivant, I guess you can say. But like his work is something where it's like I was introduced to it, and I've been slowly, you know, as over the years, kind of pushing other people into like, okay, you need to check this out. You need to check, like, that's a pure kind of cult type of drink, but it's like one little film kind of gets you into that inkling, and then it slowly moves you forward. I guess you can say you may never, like, I mean, not to you, but you may never get to the heights, but you may be more kind of happy because you're able to do things with a kind of certain independence or certain like art, you know, you're able to do something in an artist ideal where it makes you feel more whole, I guess you can say.
Yeah. I mean, I think that, and it's like, I think, you know, I ultimately do, you know, want to have, I do have ambitions of even stuff as a writer, maybe right. I won't even direct, but mm-hmm. no, ultimately, like if I showed, cause so Mondo is the film that I'm sure maybe we'll talk about when it comes out again.
Okay.
But like, is the film that comes out, you know, in August.
It's the one you're getting out this year. That's the one that's coming out.
Yeah, that's the feature, the comedy, mm-hmm. the psychedelic film. It's like
it's your transition because, like I said, a lot of the stuff you've done, like there's some shorts, but most of the stuff you've done is documentary, kind of somewhat political documentary. From the stuff I've been able to find through interviews.
With Mondo, if I was ever to show that to like a more traditional mainstream. But, yeah. you know, if I showed them that script, they would be like, you know, what the fuck are you sending me? Right, like, what right. is this? Like, but it's it's like, you know, it's in a weird way. So I was lucky enough where Martin Scorsese's kind of team, mm-hmm. You know, includes like one of my idols is Thelma Schoonmaker as editor. Okay. Yep. And like, and then his producer, Robert DeFina, who actually produced May 15th in Paris, which is a short film I did in France. And she's kind of, you know, helps me a lot and stuff like that. But Thelma Schoonmaker would kind of talk about how, you know, she would even tell, I think, Scorsese about like how to do experimental stuff when you're younger because you're not going to be able to do it as much later. Right. Yeah, so it's like it. Yeah,
because she was Powell. Was that Michael Pressburg? Michael Powell's wife. And also editor, right? Am I sure? Am I correct?
I think that might be correct, but I'm not 100% sure. But there was definitely in with that circle. Like I think right. that mm-hmm. Scorsese. So the idea of knowing that I will never be able to make a crazy bizarre movie like Mondo Hollywoodland ever, yeah. unless I do it this way with like a phone and my good friends, because
right.
that's also part of the fun too. Is making movies with your friends is kind of like,
some of my favorite movies are films that are you can truly tell that the cast either really gets along well and there's no real stress. It seems like everybody kind of knows what they're doing. They do what they do, and they're able to get it done. You know what I mean? And I, like especially like 80s kind of shot on video stuff, you can definitely tell that it's just a kind of a shot on, you know, it's you're shooting it right then and there, and they're just kind of blowing it out and they're going to have fun with it. You know what I mean?
Cassavetes too, in the 70s, 60s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, you know, it's just you can definitely tell that there's a loose vibe to it, but everybody knows what they need to do, and they're not there to fuck around. That's kind of stuff that always entertains me with that kind of filmmaking. So with the film you're working on, the one that's going to be coming out, what were the inspirations for Mondo Hollywoodland? Like, what were the kind of, I know you're saying like psychedelia and stuff like that, but was there any kind of film of that time, 60s, late 70s, early 70s type of
stuff? Yeah. So there was actually back in like 2015, Paul Thomas Anderson was at AFI Film Festival, and he specifically played Mondo Hollywood, which is a 1967 film. And that was like a documentary, but it was like a Mondo documentary. Mondo. It was like, bizarre. It kind of just like, it's awesome. I mean, Robert Ryan Cohen, I think was his name, is directed it.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I remember I actually missed, it was like a whole bizarre story, but I ended up seeing the movie finally. And I was like, oh, that'd be cool to do a something like that. But I was thinking about doing it in VR because VR was becoming a thing. I'm kind of glad I didn't do that because I don't think that really panned out. But I didn't like it. I ended up trying to shoot. I was like, this isn't what I want. Like, this is what I like. So mm-hmm. I ended up kind of taking this idea of these like Mondo 60s, like fake documentaries about places. And then mm-hmm. in this case, there was like one about Hollywood, and then kind of like started to do that. But and then I met my lead actor and producing partner on the project, co-writer.
Right.
So and that kind of changed. I was like, oh, let's just do this as a crazy narrative film and like a little bit of like cinema verite. Yeah. But like, so we kind of just did its entirely new thing. And we kind of like I wanted to avoid some of the cool stuff in like, you know, crazy 60s films will be like very crass and like, you know, exploitation arts. Like, so we kind of wanted to do something a little bit more like, we almost thought it'd be more fun to do it if it was like a little bit more like, not so much in that vein, but just kind of like more kind of a lot of drugs, but still kind of like wholesome in a funny way.
Well, like, yeah, but like the thing,
like, So it was a fun, that was a cool, like, yeah, it's hard to kind of explain because, you know, the movie's not out yet, but like, I think, yeah.
Right. But I understand where you're coming from, because certain things that were exploitive and still kind of shocking in the 60s, especially with the mindset of the generations we have now, some of that stuff can be even more terrifying and even more kind of off-putting for people.
Yeah, and I'm just not even particularly too into it. So it was just kind of like, I mean, it's like, it's obviously as like a time capsule, you're like, whoa, you know, it's just a different time. But like, I kind of was drawn more to the idea of building these kind of characters. You know, there's characters that are like in Antifa, they're like goofy and crazy, and then and then there's like characters that are like, you know, just total just cokeheads and like you know, mushrooms deal. And it's kind of, the whole thing is kind of just building out this universe of just kind of bizarre eccentric characters, but that are ultimately kind of like, you know, kind of part of this like weird Hollywood family. So that, yeah, it's kind of, like I said, I guess it would be harder, or I'd rather talk about it more maybe when it's out, because it's doing a bad job explaining.
No.
But I think you get what I'm saying.
I guess where you're going from. I don't know. so like, I don't know, what the hell, what do I want to say? like I said, this is not something I normally do. You're working on this. Did anything happen in the last year? Like, did everything that you're working on with this film, did it kind of get stuck in like a portion of like in the last year and a half or so? Because of all COVID and everything, like,
a lot
of people are kind of like, especially independent people, independent directors and whatnot. I know there's a couple of people that I know were working on a project at the end of 2019, and by like March, when they actually started getting ready to shoot, they got screwed, and now they're starting to do stuff now because things are starting to, you know, kind of, we can get people out. More people are getting the vaccine and whatnot. So he's able to get people, they're able to keep people together. It just kind of like wrecked the whole.
We shot it before. So it slowed things down a little bit with like, just like getting it ready to release. Right. So that's what, it probably would have been released like a few months before, but like, no, I personally just chose, I didn't really want to shoot anything. Like I didn't, there's a next movie I'm making after this that is a little bit bigger in budget that require a more traditional crew. And I kind of was just like, let's just do this later. So I didn't try to really get anything going during, I kind of focused more on, you know, what working with what kind of the stuff we already do have and developing new scripts and the IP.
You threw everything. You just went to the back and just kind of worked on the stuff you had, which is great.
Yeah, it's like because with the films, it's like there's making movies, there's writing movies, there's developing movies, there's like nurturing movies that already been out. Yeah. So it's largely kind of why I was reaching out to cool like cult film podcasters, because I was like during COVID, because I was like, oh, like let me have a cool conversation with like a cool film buff, you know. So it's like that was part of it, honestly, is even reaching out to a few podcasts, because it's ultimately like that's one part of filmmaking, and it's the one part of filmmaking that requires hundreds of people or at least dozens of people or even just a few people is the one thing you can't do. You might as well just focus on maybe some of the other stuff you can kind of just mess around with, whether that be writing, you know, like I said, all the stuff, nurturing films that already exist, developing stuff, and you know, there's some people that are obviously, you know, we're able to shoot stuff during COVID, and that's great, you know, but it's just like, I was just like, fuck that.
yeah. So with your documentaries, is it now that you're kind of focusing on more feature film, is it a much more of a relief than what you were doing with documentaries? Because it seems like it's a lot of research and a lot of trying to get people to kind of either work with you to kind of get the right angle on the film that you're working on, you know, not right angle, but you're trying to get all the facts out there. And that's got to be a big pain.
Yeah, no, it was weird. So my first documentary, or I should say the first feature doc, and the one I did with Cromwell, the idea was it was a documentary about the war on terror and how it impacts civil liberties.
Yeah.
So that's something that, and it was just, you know, it was my propaganda. I remember the Hollywood, like, it was very just blatantly anti-American imperialist, very anti-war, very like pro-civil liberty, civil rights. Mm-hmm. And it was just very unapologetically, that was my viewpoint. It was very obvious. So I remember like, you know, there was a few reviewers that were like, this is just very biased and stuff. And I'm just like, well, I don't know. That's my whole point. I'm trying to say what I'm thinking. So it can be difficult. Like, I'm not going to try to do some both sides thing if I know that the other side is fucking wrong. So it's like, so, you know, I'm not going to like, I'm not gonna like interview like Leon Panetta to get his, or like Dick Cheney to get his view on the plight of the Iraqis. It's ridiculous. So I'm kind of glad I'm not in that space, because I just kind of feel like, I don't know. And don't get me wrong, the documentary was very lower budget. I didn't have a lot of money, so by no means am I saying like that it was perfect. It was very run, like stitched together. I didn't have a lot of money, and I was like 24 at the time, so like it was like, I probably would have done it differently now for sure. But no, just the idea of making, conveying my thoughts and feelings on the world or whatever through narrative is just more interesting to me. But that I do love, documentaries still, just because I do have that political itch of wanting to kind of like have, you know, like be in the conversation. So I will like executive produce, documentaries I really like, I find interesting. Like there's an Ecuadorian documentary that's coming out. There's a friend of mine is Haitian. He wants to do a documentary about the Haitian refugee crisis. Okay. Kind of like that. So like stuff like that, I'll kind of like put my hands in and help where I can and not, but yeah, as a director, I don't see myself like directing a documentary for like ever, maybe.
do you feel like the time we're working on documentaries, do you feel like it helped you with the feature film stuff? Like I just as being able to kind of work the kinks out through working through documentaries and be more kind of, I guess, I know, relaxed, but like more confident to make an actual feature.
Oh yeah, 100%. I mean, because it helped me like learn how to edit, you know, right? So it's like I kind of would have to tell I used so much stock footage because I didn't have too much money to just go and shoot stuff. Right. I kind of just would shoot the interviews with the ACLU and or whoever, like or lawyers or constitutional lawyers or whoever, right. And I would go and I put it in my final draft, and then I'd have to download terabytes of stock footage just to kind of have it pieced together and kind of tell just at least keep people's attention for 70 minutes.
Right.
That was really my goal. My only goal was to see if I could do something that will last a 70 minutes and I can keep people's attention. And I basically just based it off of like a one page outline. Yeah. I didn't like write a script for the doc, but that helped me kind of know how to edit to over time, because it's like one thing to do a short film. Like, you know, you have like 5 minutes, like, you know, you'll probably keep their attention. I mean, even then it's really hard, but to kind of pace something out and structure it for, you know, over an hour is it's a different thing. So it was easier, like, you know, it was a great way to practice knowing how to do that just from a technical and editing standpoint.
Okay.
And then obviously, you know, it's all about writing when you do a narrative feature and just having the structural bones. But and then with a movie like a psychedelic movie like Mondo, it obviously kind of relies a little bit too on like, you know, kind of being crazy and weird sound design and editing. So that helped me because obviously the documentary was is also very stylistic because, like I said, I didn't have much to work with like, I wasn't shooting like I wasn't, you know, like in the Mideast shooting or anything I was just kind of I was just like talking heads, music, and stock footage essentially.
Right. So like I said, you keep yourself busy, which is always a beautiful thing about anybody who's working within the industry. But like, I don't know. How do you like, so how did you have any kind of like hesitations when you transitioned from documentaries to this? Like, was it just an automatic, like, I just want to get my hands on making an actual feature?
Yeah, it was definitely that. I mean, I've done the first film I did was a 15 minute short that was a narrative. And it was like, you know, in many ways it was shot well, like more traditional than even the Mondo, because it was like a crew and you know, I was really young. So I remember people like, you know, there was a lot of just like older crew. It was like 15 people.
Yeah.
And like, I was kind of just like, I don't like, it was weird. It was difficult. So like, I already had my hand in that a little bit before. Mm-hmm. So no, I always kind of knew that's what I wanted to do. I remember at one point with the documentary, I was just like, I just need to make something. So I even had all the interviews, and I think at one point I thought I lost the drive. And I was like, that sucks.
Wow.
So like, and then 6 months later, I kind of just to show, like, I didn't even know if I wanted to do the doc. I wanted to always do narrative.
Right. Yeah.
So then the doc stuff was just there because it was easier. It's because it's just so, it was just felt so abstract and hard to get like actors and especially money. Like, the idea of being young and trying to get money to make your first feature is just like, it's just so, it turns a lot of people off, and I get it. So that's why it's the better to do it just like as cheap as possible and just try to tell the story. And like, you know, because one person I reached out to, I used to like bother his like attorney all the time just to see if I can get a hold of him, because he was like my hero growing up, is Coppola. Right.
Okay.
And he ultimately, the advice he gave, I got, eventually he was like, fine, I'll see if you can talk to him. And then I was able to talk to him for a while. Cool. It was really cool. Awesome. So he told me, and what he said, he was like, don't worry about the camera and the technical stuff, like having the right equipment, because nobody cares. Like, it's like he goes, it, the most important thing is just to have good performances and good story.
Yeah.
Cause he goes, that's, and I think I know what he's saying, because I'm sure there's, because I know a lot of people who are, you know, they need all the budget and everything, and it's just very hard to get to that point. But ultimately, if you just tell a story with, you know, and just entertain people for a little bit, that's the first step, and then you can make your masterpiece or whatever you want to try to do later or something. But like, I don't know, he gave me the good advice of just to go make something and make sure that they're at least like, the performance is there, the story, and to not stress too much about the technical stuff, because the technical stuff is always going to change, right? Because it's like, you watch a movie from the you know, 20s or something, and it's like, if the stories and the performance is there, you're kind of still like, oh, cool. But it's like, no, you're not, you know, and then in a weird way, sometimes even the technology kind of becomes like almost like a cool vintage thing. Like, it can almost work in its favor. Like, you were talking earlier about the video camera stuff, and like, you watch some of the, you know, scratchy 16 millimeter stuff in the 60s, I'm sure at the time they probably were like, oh shit, I wish we could had, you know, the best equipment, but they didn't. Now it looks cool. You know what I mean? So you can only hope that sometimes the lower budget stuff can kind of age nicely in a weird way, especially for like a more cult film audience. You know what I mean? We're kind of more into the odd looking stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely. Definitely. Cause a lot of the stuff I'm into is definitely kind of the low bearing fruit, the kind of dregs, I guess you can say, kind of directors and people who put together shit pretty much not on the on the fly, but definitely like they're given a small amount of money and no time, and they just bang out something, and it's crazy, but it's also kind of highly enjoyable. So I don't know.
Like, and you can look at a movie like Ed Wood. I mean, like, it's like, you're like, that guy's awesome.
the guy
fucking loves movies, you know? And it's like, at the end of the day, it's like, I think sometimes I feel like people think success as a before, like as a, they think the end result
might
be too much of like the idea of like making something great or successful and all those kind of things. Where the process of making stuff, you know, is kind of should be the most fun part about it. And to kind of like not take yourself too seriously, I think is a huge, you know, in this movie, it's like some of the shit I make is just bizarre. Yeah. So it's like, you know, and it's like, it's kind of like, it feels almost like a getting out of a comfort zone to kind of be like, yeah, don't take yourself or even some of the work too seriously. You know?
Definitely. Well, like with Wood, like you said, with Wood, his movies are kind of borderline psychotic, you know. It's definitely a man who really had too much, like he was way too into himself, and he thought he was making these masterpieces, right? He thought he was Orson Welles.
Right.
And there are some funness to them, especially like his later period stuff. There's a film called Take It Out and Trade. If you've never seen it, try to find it.
What's it called?
Take It Out and Trade.
Okay.
Yeah, it's one of his last films as a director. He would go on, continue writing stuff. And, but it's bizarre. It's kind of a detective whodunit type of thing. But it's probably the best thing he's ever done. Cause it's very ahead of its time. There are a very pro LGBT, idea into it. And that it was made in the '70s, which is kind of like that time period where that,
that's really cool. Like,
You know, and it's still kind of his kind of crazy kind of ideas. It's shot weirdly. You can definitely tell that the whatever kind of film he got was cheap, and he probably had no time to make it. But it's a fun film, unlike the stuff he did in the '50s, which was just, you know, at times very. It's, you can watch it. It's just, you sit there and you get, the stories make no sense, but you can just, it's mesmerizing what it is. And the directors that I like, for the most part, are the ones who you remember. You remember what they did, regardless if it was bad or not. those are the guys you're going to, they're going to be stuck in the back of your head, you know?
And that's right.
And that's what most independent directors I've met through my life is that that's what they want to be. That's what they want. They want to be remembered for the work they did, you know? And it seems like,
right. I mean, it's literally the last line of Ed, or at least the last thing Ed Wood says to himself, where he's like, this is the one I'll be remembered for.
You know,
you even look at like directors like, you know, and someone like Joe Dante, right? Mm-hmm. It's like some of his movies are insane, but they're so memorable. I mean, I remember watching The Burbs or the Tom Hanks one when I was like six, and I just never forgot it. I only saw it once, and it's just like, why is that? Because it's so odd, like Bruce Stern, and it's just like, and then you know, like Money Pit and stuff. You're like, what is this? But it's so like memorable because it's just got a lot of like. I just bizarreness into it and like feeling and thought. I don't know. It's kind of hard to describe, but I know what you mean.
Yeah. Like just like stuff like Inner Space, another Dante film, which is a blatant reference to, 50s films of the 60s and stuff like that. You know, and it's crazy and off the wall, and you can't believe that a production company actually gave him the money to make it. Even though he hasn't made a film in God knows how many years, still is a big figurehead. He'll go on a podcast.
Yeah,
he has his own podcast. I mean, he'll sit there and talk about, you know, the most esoteric kind of stuff all the time because his head is filled with that stuff. And it's
We're definitely going to try to show a Mondo at some point.
Oh, awesome. Yeah.
yeah, for sure. No, and it's like, and it's funny because it's like, it's just, and some of the movies, like I'm really into, like Easy Rider is one of my favorite movies because it was just like, I was always told that it's like there's like almost a biblical story about that movie where it's like Hollywood was get lost at sea in the 50s making these like weird musicals and then nobody was watching and then suddenly like you know Hopper and Fonda and Nicholson make this bizarre movie and it grosses like you know equivalent to today to like $1 billion and everyone it just changed everything so there's obviously a lot of other people that were involved in the change in the new Hollywood but like there has that kind of like consolidated little story but you look at a movie like that and you're like it's out there and stuff but it's pretty like you know it's like compared to some of the movies we're talking about it's pretty like you know which it's somewhat traditional in terms of made so it's like but yeah some of the stuff people were talking about you even go further peel it back even further and it's like even more kind of bizarre in the sense of like there really are like barely any rules and movies and
like Easy Rider it definitely takes the you know because a lot of those guys worked with Corman at the time they were you know
right
and you can definitely tell that they took the aesthetic that Corman was working with in film and kind of pinged it with this kind of French art new wave style and it definitely completely blew people's heads back because it was you know no one expected that you know it's not a film that you would see in a drive-in but it's not a film you would see in like the main in an art house theater. So it kind of just completely changed everybody's opinions on everything. And then when that movie became so big, they just, you know, the studios kind of really frothed at the mouth for it and gave, you know, a bunch of directors way too much time and way too much money to make very interesting film. That whole time period is, you know, there's a lot of great films were made then. And a lot of great directors that came in and out of it. But, you know, they'll never get that again. I mean, especially now how tight these corporations are with their money on trying to make anything that isn't a sequel or a superhero film or a video game film.
I will say though that in the 60s where there was this kind of explosion of the new Hollywood director, you know, most of those people were from like, a lot of them were from USC, UCLA, you know, they kind of they were on their own little path to that kind of thing. Where now because of technology is kind of lowering the cost of making things, you are seeing kind of new people from predominantly more like lower class background, like making stuff, which I think is cool too. I think so in a weird way, I think there's kind of a new explosion of movies. And then sure, there's obviously the like there was back then too. It's like in the new Hollywood area, Gulf and Western and ran paramount, you know.
Yeah.
But now it's like I try to be very optimistic because you're just seeing so many new voices from all these different you know parts of the world and cultures and stuff.
Yeah, definitely.
And, so I think that's a very positive thing that's happening, and it's almost like finishing what some of the new Hollywood didn't kind of complete. Like you had like the L.A. Rebellion and stuff like that, and stuff like, but like you kind of, it mostly was just, it did get gobbled up by the kind of like Jaws, Star Wars stuff. And that's, I love that stuff. Like I said earlier, I love that stuff, but it's like, you know, you want to, I like the idea of like a more decentralized film industry where you really get to hear and hear and listen to a lot and watch a lot of people's like life experiences and share world views and stuff like that. Yeah, so I think that's cool.
Yeah. The fact that like it's more, you're more kind of, it's easier to find, go to a multiplex theater and see like a Bollywood film nowadays compared to when I was a child and you were a kid. It's kind of, it's great that you can go and see like a foreign film that's because whatever corporation owns the company they have, they, you know, they know their audiences and they know that they'll go see these films.
Right.
It's just fascinating. And the fact that you can go online and find anything now, even stuff that's new now that's from other countries, and just kind of keep your mind completely open and you're not stuck to just being watching what Hollywood's putting out. Which is,
yeah, like even there's a new, there's a great film. I won't say much about because it's a film from Lebanon, and I was like, you know, I basically reached, I reached out and I was like, hey, you know, let me know if my company and myself can help, and so like that might be something we work on in the future. So it's like, and like I wouldn't 7 years ago or 8 years ago when I first came out, like I wouldn't think like that wouldn't be part of my strategy, but like now it's like, oh, it can be, like it can be something where it's like there's a viability and like. Because people are interested in kind of the across the pond.
A lot of people are more open minded about where films are coming from. If they're telling a great story, they don't particularly care where it comes from nowadays. It's you know, the audience isn't as closed minded as it was 20, 30 years, 40, 50 years ago, you know.
Right. No, so it's definitely something I try to like as a producer, going back to like your first question, is like be mindful of that, because you know, I know I'm only limited to the amount of stories I can tell as a director. Right. I'm not going to try to tell some story that somebody, from across some other continent. Like obviously it was like adapted from a book and I was collaborating with the right people, but it's like, but no, mostly it's like, you know, I'm going to try to do some stories that come by and then share that. But like, as a producer, I think that's the fun part, is you can really kind of like collaborate with people who have a totally different thing to say. And that's kind of the beauty of it, you know? Mm-hmm.
Cool. I don't really know what else you want to, is there anything like I know you don't want to talk about the film, and I'd gladly have you come back and talk about Mondo Hollywood Land when it comes out during the summertime.
It'll come out, so you know, right now people can definitely go to my website.
I was gonna say maybe give out your information to see if people
I like the website's boring. Go to our Instagram, Assembly Line ENT, so Assembly Line ENT on Instagram, and like, you know, we'll promote some of our stuff we have. You'll get a good sense of like where we're at with our projects,
right?
You know, the Mondo's gonna probably come out some point at the end of summer, early fall. The Ecuadorian documentary, The Legend of Teos, is going to come out around that time. So people follow our Instagram, you know, if they just search Assembly Line Entertainment, they'll find it. You know, that's probably the best like little, station to like, to check out. Then our website, assemblylineentertainment.com. And then, I'll definitely be back with my, my producing partner, lead actor of Mondo. Fall, and we'll definitely do a kind of shoot the shit and just talk about the movie after you've seen it.
All right, that's cool. Yeah, cool. I think this went well.
Yeah, absolutely, man. It was a good chat. It was a good chatting about Joe Dante and Ed Wood and stuff. It was awesome. You're from Jersey. Are you a Devils fan?
No, I particularly watch a lot of. I watch a lot of soccer and not a lot of hockey.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's pretty much it.
Okay, cool, man.
But thank you for coming on. Thank you.
Have a good see you later.
All right, bud. Later. Now there's the interview with Yannick Ambrose. I don't know if you got to hear it in the end of the interview, but he gave out his information. So check out his Instagram at AssemblyLineENT. And then his website is AssemblyLineEntertainment.com. If you'd like to, you know, talk to my dumb ass, motionpicturemassacre@gmail.com, motionpicturemassacre@gmail.com, and the voicemail feedback line is 732-639-1435. That's 732-639-1435. Hope you enjoyed this. It was kind of completely out of the blue. Whatever. But before I shit myself, good night.
Hey, Godzilla! It's over! You must forgive! damn lizard.